Today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Today is Friday, April 16th, 2021. I am your host, recent Temple Media School graduate and lifelong Philadelphia Phillies fan, Dan Wilson. And on today's episode, a little Locked On Podcast Network crossover edition. And for the first time ever, I go outside the National League East. Well, I guess that's not technically true. I did a crossover with Gabriel Starr from Locked On Red Sox once. But this is the first time, the reason why I went outside the National League East, or just the East Coast in general, is I did a crossover episode with Lucas Smith from Locked On Cardinals. And this is the first time in more than 500 days since the 2019 season that the Phillies will be playing a team outside the AL or the NL East. Of course, last year they played exclusively a regular season schedule, 40 games against the National League East, 20 games against the American League East. But this year they're back to playing, you know, the teams that all across the country, the National League Central, the National League West, and of course some interleague play mixed in there as well. But that's one of the best things, I think, about the long haul of Major League Baseball season and the schedule makers making the Phillies wait it out two more weeks. So, of course, they are at 6-6 at this point, based upon a 5-1 homestand against the Braves and Mets, and then a 1-5 road trip, once again, against the Braves and Mets, with yesterday's game getting rained out, with the bats not really performing up to par right now. Jacob deGrom, certainly not the guy you want to do it against. So, quite honestly, not that I ever root for a rainout, but if there was ever a well-timed rainout, certainly with Jacob deGrom pitching in New York, on the road where the Phillies have struggled this season against the best pitcher in baseball, not necessarily the place to do it. So the Phillies will return home where they've been a lot better this season for a three-game set against the St. Louis Cardinals. Tonight's matchup will be Zach Eflin going up against Carlos Martinez, and Carlos Martinez in a couple of starts this season as a 6.30 ERA. So hopefully the Phillies bats will, you know, have a resurgence here back at Citizens Bank Park against a pitcher who has struggled in the early going. So I talked to Lucas about his take on the Cardinals so far this season. They are also 6-6, and they're coming in to Philly with a four-game losing streak. I talked to him about the history just of the St. Louis Cardinals recently. They always seem like they're in the playoff hunt. He at one point referred to them, or said that other people refer to them, as the Yankees of the National League, and they've had sustained success for a while out there in the Midwest. And of course, it's not a team the Phillies see a ton. They come to Philadelphia once per year, and they go out there once per year, actually going to be done with them in April this season. Always enjoy talking baseball. Also, outside the National League East, always look forward to getting to meet people on the Locked On Podcast Network outside of kind of like the Northeast Corridor and outside of the National League East. Of course, I know all the NL East hosts pretty well, but so got a chance to meet Lucas for the first time. We talked Phillies, we talked Cardinals, we talked this series, what we're each looking for, and kind of previewed how this weekend is going to go. So, without any further ado, I present to you my conversation with Lucas Smith about this weekend series between the Phils and Cardinals.
Joining us today on Locked On Phillies is it is another crossover episode here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Joining me from the Locked On Cardinals podcast is Lucas Smith. He is a junior at the University of Missouri. Lucas, how are you doing today?
I am good. Ready for a baseball game. Cardinals were off yesterday, so I'm ready for another Cardinals series. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Phillies were not supposed to be off yesterday, but they got rained out in New York. So they, they had an off day yesterday as well. And they're going to return home, a place they've been much better at than on the road this season. 5-1 at Citizens Bank Park, 1-5 away from Citizens Bank Park. And also, this is the first time since 2019 they're going to play a National League opponent that's not in the NL East. They started out Braves, Mets. So it's going to be kind of cool to see another team in the league again. The Cardinals and Phillies kind of both skidding here a little. With Cardinals have lost their last four. Phillies have lost five of their last six on the road. So two teams looking to right the ship early in the season here. Give me what's the vibe around the Cardinals right now? Obviously some recent struggles, but they both come in 6-6 and dead even 500 here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if this was last year, I mean, with a 60-game sprint, alarm bells would be blaring and it'd be panic time. But with 162, you know, yes, every game matters, but there's still plenty of time to right the ship, right? But I mean, the big story so far has been the outfield struggles for St. Louis, and the bullpen has been absolutely masterful. But the problem is that the bullpen has been overworked. So it's been, you know, starters only go in 4 or 5 innings. They've only had one starter go 6 innings, and that was Jack Flaherty one time in Miami. So, I mean, the bullpen has been really overworked. We have Carlos Martinez going today, who has not looked exceptional in his 2 starts. So it's mediocre right now. Cardinal fans with the acquisition of Nolan Arenado are getting kind of restless, but you know, like I said, we got plenty of time to right the ship with the 162 game season.
I know it's, so I actually wanted to ask you about Nolan Arenado. So not necessarily his fault, his OPS over 900 right now, I believe it. Like, he's been pretty good. What have you liked from Nolan over there at third base in the early going?
Yeah, he's gelled well with the team, has been like the common, you know, thought process about everybody, and the brawl that happened on opening weekend at Cincinnati. He was right in the thick of it with his teammates. And he had a big moment in the home opener as well last Thursday, hitting the home run in the 8th inning to get the Cardinals the lead, got a curtain call in his first Cardinal game, which was huge. So yeah, I mean, he started the season with a 9-game hitting streak. I mean, the players to do that, to start their career as a Cardinal, are very, very few. And he was one off from either the record or tying the record. So it has not been his fault at all in terms of the offensive struggles.
So I'll get into the pitching matchup tonight. So it'll be Zach Eflin going up against Carlos Martinez. You mentioned the bullpen being overworked. The Phillies have had a few starts like that recently. Starters just not going deep enough into games, getting their pitch counts up high. Martinez coming in with a 6.30 ERA coming to this one. Zach Eflin, who looked very good in his first start, but the Phillies kind of just in general, their starters have not looked as good the second time through the rotation here. What are you looking for out of Martinez in tonight's start and throughout the course of the season? And also, it's a little overcast here in Philadelphia today, but usually a hitter-friendly ballpark, not necessarily always the best place to try and right the ship of the season.
Right. Yeah. I think that, I mean, for Carlos, it's how does he handle adversity? Because in his first start, he went 4 solid innings and then gave up a 3-run home run. And all of a sudden he you know, got in a jam and then gave up a 3-run home run. And his second start, it was pretty similar, pitched really well, got into some adversity and gave up another run or two. So it's how does he handle that adversity the second, third time through the lineup? Because when he's right, he's got some of the best stuff on this team. Like, I would make an argument that he's got better stuff than Jack Flaherty when Carlos Martinez is as good as he can be. So it's all about consistency with him. You know, pretty basic. You know, you got a fastball, slider, changeup. I think he got a 2-seam fastball he's working on as well. So, you know, the repertoire is pretty basic, but it can be pretty deadly when he's right. That changeup can be a real equalizer against left-handed hitters. And we'll see how it goes. I think that, like I said, consistency is the name of the game. This is a guy who's been an all-star in the past. So it's just a matter of, can he get through the second time through the lineup without having to deal with too many runners on base?
Kind of sidetrack from this series in general, just because it was a big story around baseball. So you're 21, 22. I know you said you're a junior.
Just 20. I'm a young one.
I'm 21 until July. Yeah. Do you remember, do you have any memories of anyone catching for the Cardinals other than Yadier Molina? Like, is that a thing?
No. I mean, I know that it happened in my lifetime. I know that Mike Matheny was a catcher, but no, it's been Yadi ever since I can remember watching a baseball game.
Like, that's not, like, what was it, 2,000 games he got to this week in a car, in the same uniform? In
same St. uniform, 2,000 games as a catcher. I think he's the 6th catcher to reach that mark. First catcher to do it, only with the Cardinals. And it was a real special moment. I don't know if you saw it or not, but Mike Schilt gave him the day off before so he could get that start with Adam Wainwright, who has been there pretty much since Yadi as well. It's been very special to watch them kind of, you know, blossom their careers. And Wainwright threw the first pitch, Molina threw it out, standing ovation. Wainwright was clapping behind the mound, all sorts of things. So it was a real special moment for sure. And above all, Molina's still producing, like, he's still hitting. So it's not just a milestone just for out of longevity, but it's longevity plus the ability to produce. So yeah, it's been Yadi ever since I can remember.
He's been in baseball 2004.
He made his debut in 2004.
Yeah. Okay, so since 2000, so I actually should look this up before. He's 36, 37,
got to be
38 years old 38. At this point. I mean, that's nuts. Catchers usually who tail off around their early 30s. There was catcher news big here in Philadelphia this past offseason, bringing back JT Realmuto. It's like, wow, he's going into his 30s. Like, are they going to get the same production at the end of this 5-year contract that they're getting now? Yadier Molina just, it seems like he has the job for life. And
yeah,
like, not that the Phillies and Cardinals play that often, But I mean, there have been some there was a big playoff series back in 2011. Is the rally squirrel still a thing in St. Louis, by the way?
Like, it's remembered. It is remembered very fondly, but I don't know if it's still a thing today. But yeah,
what a brutal series. I mean, that was the worst Phillies loss of my entire life. It just, the entire sequence of it, losing in five games to that team. I hate it. I really learned to like just hate that team. And it turned out to be a very good World Series. And it wasn't like I was actively rooting against them. But I just wanted to know if that was still a thing, because that rally squirrel really threw off the entire Phillies mojo.
I mean, I still remember, I don't know if you're recording this video, but I got the World Series DVD right here. So I still watch this fondly. And that's
do they really highlight that division series in Philly? I'm glad
they do, especially with the rally squirrel in game four.
Yeah. I'm certainly glad to hear it. Oh my! And you were 10 at that. I mean, I wasn't that much old. I was in eighth grade, but
I was in sixth grade.
That was, if you can believe it, that was the last time the Phillies played a playoff series.
Wow! Yeah, because after that, Howard got hurt, Utley and Rollins. It's like, wow, that's bizarre. Halliday fell off the table as well. Yeah, I guess I didn't think about that. It's been a while.
It's been a little bit. The second longest playoff drought in baseball to only the Mariners, who are like 10 years before that. Since 2001, so it's been a long while for them. But yeah, no, the Phillies, look, they came in, just to kind of give you the Phillies perspective on this season, and again, I'm hoping both teams hoping they can right the ship here, and hoping that the Phillies kind of return to form here a little bit when they return home. They came in, like I said, out of the gate firing 5-1. They sweep the Atlanta Braves, who are the, you know, stone cold favorites to win the National League East. They sweep the Braves in the opening series. They win 2 of 3 from the Mets, and everyone's like, wow, this is the team that's going to take a step forward. And we've been saying that for years. It feels like last year they fell a game short of the playoffs on the final day. Mm-hmm. They lost 7 of 8 to end the season. And it's like, wow, if they could have just won one more, they would have gotten in the playoffs. They would have gotten killed by the Dodgers, whatever the case might be, but they couldn't even get in because the bullpen was just so freaking bad, like an ERA over 7, right? And this year, the bullpens look better. The starting pitching, I mean, it's been decent. It was very good the first time around. The starting pitching depth is an issue. Matt Moore and Chase Anderson, the 4 and 5 starters. Chase Anderson's actually given them a couple of good starts. Matt Moore struggles to go deep into games. Aaron Nola struggled to go
back.
Yeah, Aaron Nola has struggled to go deep into some games and really have his sharpest stuff in the last couple of starts. But ultimately, the pitching has been good, and especially the bullpen has been miles better than it was last year, and that's a low bar. The real big concern around the team that is kind of sitting head and shoulders above all else at the moment based upon this road trip has just been the offense. The offense has been putrid. Adam Haseley, who was playing center field with Roman Quinn, is now off the team for personal reasons, and they don't know when or if he's going to be back. So now you're stuck with Roman Quinn, which is not a major league, like, he's fast, but he's not a major league hitter. You have the pitcher spot back in the National League, so that's your 9 spot. Andrew McCutchen, unfortunately, just looks like a pure shell of himself, and no one in Philly was expecting to be MVP Andrew McCutchen. We've had him here for a few years. He experienced an injury here, but usually he gives you a good at bat at the top of the lineup and is a good leadoff hitter. He looks like an automatic out. So you're basically banking on the middle of the lineup of, you know, Rhys Hoskins, Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Alec Boehm to carry the entire offense. And recently they've been struggling. Made David Peterson on the Mets look like a Cy Young Award winner, for crying out loud, the other day. So if the offense does not return to form, and this is a team that was tied for the 5th most runs in baseball a year ago, so you figured the offense would be there. It was the pitching, and especially the, you know, the starting pitching depth and the bullpen that really needed to take the step forward. Mm-hmm. The offense is the one letting them down at the moment. And if they don't score runs in the St. Louis series, I mean, there might be some, people are going to be calling for people's heads in mid-April already, if they're not already.
What have your thoughts been on Joe Girardi? Because I know that whenever the, when Mike Matheny a couple years ago was fired and Mike Schilt was named the interim manager, a lot of Cardinal fans wanted Schilt, like, finish out the year, that's fine. But they wanted the Cardinals to pursue Girardi. And I was just wondering your thoughts on his tenure so far.
So it's interesting you asked that, because that's kind of been a talking point here in Philly as well. So he obviously took over at the beginning of the 60-game season, and now they're 6-6. So I guess his tenure with the Phillies has been 72 games long. So if we were talking, if he took over at the start of a normal season, we wouldn't even be at the All-Star break, right? So we wouldn't really be assessing this as like a full time. But ultimately, I don't want to know. I don't know if I want to say I'm surprised, but I think it's been underwhelming thus far based upon last year's team. There weren't a lot of games where you felt like the bullpen actually could hold it together and his options were slim to none, but he also never really pressed the right button or felt like, I feel like good managers, even with teams that maybe have offensive talent, but have pitching woes, can pull a few wins out themselves. And then this season, there was a game in Atlanta where he literally forgot about the number of mound visits they've done in the inning, and he went out there and then he had to pull Zach Wheeler mid at bat. And I don't know how familiar you were with the Gabe Kapler era in here in Philadelphia, but Gabe Kapler wouldn't have been allowed on the plane to return home if it was up to the fan base, right? Like, everyone hated him. He now manages in San Francisco just because he's, he's a forward thinker. He's not the best public speaker. Like, he talks kind of weird. He makes excuses for his players. And everyone was like, all right, finally we got a solidified winner in Joe Girardi. Phillies fans remember it well. He won his World Series in 2009 with the Yankees over the Phillies. And okay, this guy was with the Yankees. He's a good manager. And look, he probably was a good manager in New York. He probably had more talented teams in New York than he's dealing with the Phillies right here. But I haven't seen a difference making manager out of Joe Girardi. I think there have been times where he probably hasn't clicked the right button. The other night, he just flat out forgot. I think there was a game earlier against the Mets this season where I didn't fully understand what he was doing. Like, he didn't pinch hit Andrew McCutchen with a few runners on. Now, he hasn't proven to be very good either, but Roman Quinn was at the plate. And so you're sitting there saying, okay, they're just going to give him the night off, and they pinch hit McCutchen the following inning. Like, it doesn't always add up. There have been a number of defensive blunders early in the season that you'd say, okay, maybe a more fundamentally sound team would be on top of this, and you would hope, and everyone thought that the switch from Gabe Kapler, who had two September collapses, and it seemed like, everyone just thinks, oh, analytics, so fundamentals are being thrown out the window, that Girardi's going to bring that in. And I haven't seen that switch. And this is also ownership that was talking Girardi adds 5-10 wins to a team in any given year, like he's some sort of star player. I haven't seen that either. So ultimately, I think it's been relatively underwhelming. I think overall, I'm not ready to say I'm off the Joe Girardi bandwagon that it's a bad manager or anything like that.
Yeah.
But this team, ultimately you have to point some responsibility. If we're going to hold Gabe Kapler to the standard of it was a lot of your fault why this team didn't succeed. And ultimately I probably defended Gabe Kapler more than most just because I thought they overperformed the number of those seasons. They had 500 records at the end of the year. Didn't even look like a 500 roster. If we're going to hold him to that standard, Joe Girardi needs to be held to the same standard as well. So underwhelming again, it's a long season. This is the first time he's getting a full year with these guys. A lot of what happened last year probably wasn't his fault. He might be he's probably a better culture guy, so to speak, than Gabe Kapler. It seems like he's probably better at managing a clubhouse of people, which counts for something. It's not all just about what you can do on the field. This is a long season. But look, if they still lose games in, like the way they did on Saturday night, where there's a first and third one out and there's a ground ball hit back to Jose Alvarado on the mound and he's turning to second base and Didi Gregorius is pointing home and no one knows like what's kind of going on right after there was a mound visit. Like, at a certain point, you have to say, is this the difference maker we thought we were getting? And ultimately, he'll be judged at the end of the season and he'll be judged at the end of probably a few more seasons. But so I can't say that Joe Girardi has been like, wow, he's been great. I think underwhelming is the best way to describe his time with the Phillies, because they haven't really taken a step forward. They were a 500 team when he got them. They've been a 500 team since he's had them.
Yeah. I know that, I think Girardi has some sort of Cardinal connection, or at least to Peoria, Illinois, where he was playing there. But, same thing with Mike Schilt. He's been the manager since middle of the year 2018. He just managed his 300th game. He's, he's got 169 wins, I think, now is what it's up to. And he is still hated by this Cardinal fan base a lot, and there are questions with how he constructs a lineup. There are questions of how high he bats, say a Matt Carpenter, or how he, how he constructs the outfield, of not playing a John Nagowski, of playing an Austin Dean too much. Right. But, I'm always wanting to say that managers and coaching staffs are blamed too much for when they lose, and they get too much praise for when they win, especially at the major league level, because these are you know, I know that the cliche is hated a lot in our Locked On group chat, but these are professional baseball players. These are professional hitters. They know what they're doing. Yes, like you mentioned, that the culture needs to be there, but at the end of the day, a hitting coach is not going to be able, 9 times out of 10, not going to change some guy's career, not going to teach them a mechanic they've never heard before. So I just think that it's a lot more of culture and just keeping guys on track, more so than like a college coach has more impact on a college team, in my opinion, than a major league coach does on a major league team. So
because they recruited those guys.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, people are calling for Schilt and the hitting coach, Jeff Albert's head right now. And it's like, first of all, like the points I just mentioned. And second of all, it's April 16th today. Let's pump the brakes.
Today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today, rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring. Ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece, they're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only at BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10 by 10. The collection features high quality, fine jewelry that will surprise and delight and fairly priced so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. If you're on the hunt for the perfect unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10 by 10 on BlueNile.com. Get all the sports news you need in less than 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we were talking before we even went on in kind of the difference in just like culture around sports between the East Coast or like the Northeast, even more specifically, and the Midwest. The Midwest is a part of the country I have not explored nearly as much. I laid over in Chicago once. Texas doesn't even count, but I've basically just been, and I've been to the West Coast a couple of times, but I've kind of been, you know, sheltered in, you know, the East Coast. So give me a, like, when a coach is bad, like, and I know people in the Midwest love baseball. I know it's huge, Chicago, St. Louis especially. Do people call for the manager's heads the same way they call for it here? Is that how they view the East Coast? Because I've known people who have gone out to especially cities like St. Louis, and they're like, oh, they seem so much friendlier than opposing fans who watch games here. Like, do people still get angry that same way? Or is it like, what's the vibe when a coach or a player is not liked?
I mean, you know, in my experience, sports fans are going to call for somebody's head when somebody's not performing, no matter what region they're in. I mean, and for the example that I have for the Cardinals, that people couldn't stand Mike Matheny. I mean, they went through a 2-year playoff drought with him. The third year was the year he got fired. So, you know, really he only went 2 years with him. And for Cardinal fans, that is something's going wrong. The Cardinals don't make the postseason 2 years in a row, you know, say what you will about, you know, I think in the Locked On group chat the other day, somebody called the Cardinals the Yankees of the National League. And I get it, but like, in all honesty, Cardinal fans hold a high standard. I mean, they've been treated to one, they've made 4 World Series in this century. They've won 2 of them. So the standard is high, especially in Cardinal land. I could probably say the same thing for the Cubs. I mean, that's why whenever they didn't make the playoffs a couple of years, I mean, Joe Maddon won them the first World Series in 108 years. And then 4 years later, they're calling, they want him fired, and he does get fired.
What have you done for us lately? Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, So in my experience, that little sentiment that you just mentioned, what have you done for us lately? That is across the sports, across the country, across industry. You know, I talked to Ryland Stiles a lot about Mike Matheny, who's the manager for the Royals now. And it's like, yeah, we're almost there, but also the Royals are in first place. So, you know, despite the mistakes that he doesn't like about Matheny, about the bullpen management, about the media guffaws doing lately, he's doing fine. So he's going to keep his job.
If I make a trip out to St. Louis one day in a Phillies uniform, are the opposing fans really as friendly as everyone says? Like, is that a thing?
See, I think like with fans to fans, for the most part, yes. Like if you show up in a Cub jersey, probably not, right? But like in a Phillies jersey from out
east, that offensive, yeah.
Right. You know, yes, we had that series that we talked about a little bit ago, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know. I've never met a fan at Busch Stadium that has like hated me, and I've never seen an altercation of somebody else. Like whenever there is a different jersey, it's like, ah, you suck, blah, 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 blah. I don't know, but that's just my experience.
Philly fans get a bad rap. They got it on national TV last week when Braves fans were throwing stuff onto the field when Alec Bohm didn't touch home plate. I've never actually been at a game or seen a game in Philly where people were throwing stuff on the fans. They can get rowdy. They can get aggressive. I'm not going to say that I haven't seen a few fights in the stands at Eagles games. Now, it's not always started by the Philadelphia side, and maybe there's some alcohol involved. There's some, you know, passion going on.
That, yeah.
Yeah. But just to think that, oh, this kind of stuff only happens in Philly. Like, let's pump the brakes. It never happens in New York or Boston or other cities with passionate fan bases. Like, come on. This is now the second time I at least can think of Atlanta Braves fans throwing stuff on. There's that infamous playoff game. And now the other night. So, yep. You know, let's relax.
I agree. Yeah.
Getting back to this team. So we'll kind of preview these pitching matchups. So as I mentioned, tonight it'll be Eflin, Carlos Martinez. Saturday, Matt Moore, and you're going to have to correct me on, I always stumble over this name, Hwan Hung Kim. Did I get that right?
You did. Okay. It's you know, we always just call him KK Kim, and that's what he goes by, just KK. So,
all right, keep KK, it easy. KK Kim, and then on Sunday, yep. We're going to have the Phillies ace of the staff, whether he's an actual ace in the scope of Major League Baseball or not, will be debated here for years, and Aaron Nola going up against John Gant. Your thoughts kind of just going into this series as a whole, is this where the Cardinals take a step on part of this road trip here for them?
It'll be interesting because I'm a big proponent of eliminating question marks in a lineup on a pitching staff. And in all honesty, we've got three question marks going for the Cardinals this weekend. Carlos Martinez, you don't know what you're going to get. This is KK Kim's first start of the regular season. He got hurt in spring training. So this is his first start in a regular season game, or in a game that matters since the postseason game against San Diego last year. And John Gant has shown hit or miss stuff at the starting rotation. John Gant is more effective in the bullpen if you look at the numbers. The ERA is lower, strikeouts are higher. And granted, you can survive more on two pitches than his fastball. And he has like a Vulcan changeup. He grips it like this. He got massive hands. So so you can survive on two pitches more, right? But it's three question marks in the rotation this weekend. So, you know, this could be a week where they take a huge step forward or they take a step back because the pitchers pitch to the lower end of that of the totem pole. So it'll be interesting to see. And I think that on Sunday, I love Aaron Nola's stuff. I don't follow him as closely as, say, you do. But, you know, from what I see on guys like Pitching Ninja and things like that, his stuff is really good. So the offense needs a jolt. I mean, they scored 14 runs on Tuesday, and then they get shut out the next day, or Wednesday, and they get shut out the next day. So this team needs to figure out some consistency. And like I said, I have high hopes for the starting rotation this weekend, but at the same time, it's a lot of question marks and a lot of what ifs if you're looking for success for the Cardinals.
Yeah, the Phillies' biggest issue right now that just irks me to no end has been, and I mentioned the offense in general, but just the strikeout numbers. They had a doubleheader with the Mets the other day, struck out 17 times, including 14 times in a 7-inning game. Now, granted, it went to extra innings, but look, that's a lot of not putting the ball in play. And as I mentioned, it feels like they got not one, but a couple of pitcher spots at the end of the lineup. And with the way McCutchen's at bats have looked at the top leading off, it hasn't looked great. They were going to try. We don't have the lineup for tonight's game out just yet, but yesterday it looked like they were going to try Matt Joyce off the bench leading off, give McCutchen a day off his legs. He has planned off days anyway, because he's not going to play 162. So, right. But they got a lot to toy around with this lineup. Bryce Harper got his OPS in like the 960s after the series with Atlanta, and he went quiet in New York. Guy like Reese Hoskins really started out the year well. Now he has gone a little bit quiet. I mean, just the entire bats have gone quiet. They scored one run on Wednesday, and it was a home run that Gene Segura hit. But there were a number of other mistakes in that game that they either took or fouled off, or they just, a lot of these at bats look lost, and like they're letting the pitcher get ahead every single time. They just aren't able to battle back. So that's what I'm looking for. It's more balls in play. Alec Bohm, I always like to call a little bit, I don't know how familiar you are with him, a little bit of an old school hitter. Like a lot of people complain that baseball is going in the direction of, like, you know, the true outcomes and it leads to too many strikeouts. He is a guy that does not like to strike out. Like, he's a big, just hit line drives, gap to gap guy, the power will come. He doesn't try and hit home runs. And so I'm hoping that over the course of a season, I really like watching him last year. He's been a little bit disappointing in the early going this year. Not that he hasn't gotten some hits that have looked good, and he had a really nice looking home run swing when this team was still at home at the beginning of the season. But he's a guy that doesn't like to strike out. So I'm hoping that there's an adjustment made there, especially from him. But look, this is going to have to be an offensive lineup that's carried by that meat of the order, starting with Bryce Harper, starting with Hoskins, Realmuto, Bohm, because I just don't know where else the offense is coming from. Their days were Didi, Gregorius, and Gene Segura hit. But the Phillies have a huge center field hole. You obviously have to bat the pitcher, and they have a huge leading off hole at the moment. So I'm interested to see how the hitting does or does not return to form at home against, as you mentioned, a couple of question marks. Like, you can't, they were supposed to face Jacob DeGrom yesterday, and the only reason they didn't lose to him is because it rained. If you can't hit David Peterson, like, Jacob DeGrom was licking his chops, ready to throw. This was the night after the no hitter the other night. I mean, he was ready to come out and try and throw a perfect game of his own, because I don't know who the hell was going to touch him.
Yeah. I mean, side note, Jacob DeGrom is ridiculous. I mean, I just,
and the Phillies, I know that he's get the Mets 19 times a year. Like, you're going to see him a few times.
Yeah, I know that you might have a different opinion, but I think it would just be a treat to watch him pitch. I really do. But when you look at the Cardinals offensively, you know, it's been a lot of Tommy Edmond, Yadier Molina, Nolan Arenado to start. Paul Goldschmidt had a really good opening day, went like 4-for-5, and then he's got a lot of 1-for-4s, 1-for-5 since then. So his average in OPS has taken a hit, right? And like I said, the outfield, again, I use this phrase a lot, but huge question marks right now lay in the Cardinal outfield. You've got the rookie sensation, or the hopefully rookie sensation of Dylan Carlson that has high hopes. And then Lane Thomas just got optioned down for a guy named Scott Hurst, who I have to do research on because I've never heard of him, right? But you know, Austin Dean, Justin Williams are two other names that are probably going to get time this weekend. And those are both unproven guys. You know, Justin Williams is a career minor leaguer. He got his first RBI on Tuesday, major league RBI on Tuesday. But you've got, like I said, question marks in the outfield. And right now you have a little protection behind Nolan Arenado. Because Yadier Molina, who's on fire right now, is not your prototypical cleanup hitter. Like he's hitting cleanup right now because Goldschmidt's hitting second, Arenado's hitting third, and Paul DeJong, who's supposed to be the cleanup hitter, the shortstop, has forgot how to hit a baseball, apparently. Like, he just looks lost at the plate. So you've got Yadi back there, and, you know, like I said, I love Yadi, but he's not going to hit 370 the rest of the year, you know? So you got to find other options. And, you know, it's a tough thing because fans, like we mentioned earlier, fans want results now. Like, they want instant results. They want success now. But I would rather the Cardinals go 500 now and on a 7-game winning streak in October than switch it around, because that 7-game winning streak in October or September is probably going to mean more then than it is now. So it's all about a balance of patience. And that's why I think baseball is just so counter everything in sports, because, you know, or society, not to get too philosophical, but baseball, you've got to be patient, both in a game, in a week, and in a season, right? And right now, it's hard to be patient when you have high expectations of winning a division, but you're 6-6. So it's a tough place to be in right now for St. Louis. And they've got question marks and high upsides on both sides of the baseball.
Yeah, and that's a sentiment the Phillies are quite familiar with, having September collapses each of the last couple of seasons. They've been known to start out well. You're right. I'd rather, it's almost like pace yourself. Like, this is a marathon. Right. The marathon runner who is in the lead at mile 4 or mile 5, it rarely finish. I mean, in some cases maybe, but it's hard to still be in the lead at mile 26, which is really just, you want to be at the finish at the end. And all of these games may mean the same thing. And you're healthy now, and you don't know what's going to happen later in the season. And in the Phillies case, they had 13 really important division games scheduled. They only ended up playing 12 of them. But in a division that is as highly contested as it is, the Braves were a game away from going to the World Series last year. Everyone's high on the Mets based upon what they did this offseason and new ownership. Like, those are important games, and they came out 500, really dominated the first 6 games at home, really got dominated the second 6 games on the road. And now, like, this division could be, it's going to be won and lost, obviously, with those games within the division. But now that this is an expanded schedule and they're going out and playing all these National League teams, like, you can't, I don't think you can afford to, on a consistent basis, just, oh, lose 2 of 3 at home to the Cardinals, or in a couple of weeks, I mean, they got the Mets coming in again, but they have 3 with the San Francisco Giants and the first return of Gabe Kapler, by the way, coming up later this week. Like, you can't just afford to drop 2 of 3 there in April and lose ground in these standings. 'Cause I don't know if the Phillies are a talented enough team to make that huge surge against these other teams. And the Braves have started out a little bit slow. Like, you got to pounce on them now. So that's kind of my biggest concern here. We'll see how the offense kind of comes back. I wanted to get back to this Cardinals lineup just because I was complaining that the only source of offense, or like the only chance for a source of Philly's offense right now, seems to be out of that meat of the order. I was looking through the last couple of lineups, like just kind of previewing the series. So you mentioned, you know, guys like Edmund, Goldschmidt, Arenado, Molina, Carpenter at the top. I would say some lesser known guys, certainly around baseball at the bottom of the lineup, more specifically on Wednesday, you know, Justin Williams in left, Lane Thomas in center. You have Sosa at shortstop. What have you thought of, I mean, I know you said DeJong like doesn't look like he can hit a baseball right now, but what have you made of the bottom of this Cardinals lineup? Because again, my memories of the St. Louis Cardinals always seem, you call them the Yankees of the National League, or someone else called them the Yankees of the National League, at least, always seems like they have deep lineups and guys who around baseball you haven't always heard of, but by the middle of the season they're producing and they're helping this team get to the playoffs. So what's your read on this Cardinals lineup as of right now?
It's big time hit or miss. I mean, like I said, the Cardinals scored 14 runs on Tuesday, shut out on Wednesday. You know, that's like a drastic example of it, but I mean, we saw it even on opening weekend in Cincinnati. They scored 11 runs on opening day and then scored 6 runs over the next 2 games, you know? So it seems to be a big hit or miss. And this lineup, in all honesty, right now with how they're performing, isn't that deep. Because once you get past Yadier Molina in the four hole, you know, Matt Carpenter's like statistically one of the unluckiest players in baseball. He's probably going to be hitting fifth if he's in the lineup. And fans are getting tired of St. Louis media saying, oh, he's hitting the ball hard, give him a chance or whatever. It's true, because even when you're at the little league level, if you hit a ball hard, that's a win. Right. And I get that we need to start seeing results at some point for Matt Carpenter.
You're dealing with major league fielders. It's not exactly right. Put the ball in play, you'll get on first. Yeah.
Right. That's a good point. But I think that the fact of the matter is that Carpenter's barreling up the ball more than he has in 2 years. And that's a good sign for St. Louis, because if he hits fifth and he can hit like the Matt Carpenter, like we saw in 2017 and 18, you know, in 18 he garnered MVP votes, right? Then that makes this lineup a lot deeper. Because, but again, at the same time, if he's just going to hit the ball hard but hit him right at the second baseman who's standing in short right field, it doesn't know good. So I get both sides of the argument, right? And then beyond him, like I mentioned, the outfield of a Justin Williams, of a John Nagowski who might see some time, of an Austin Dean, they struggled. There's no way around it. Tyler O'Neill, who had an exceptional spring, struggled out of the gate. Now he's hurt. Harrison Bader is hurt. And Harrison Bader is a guy that seems like everybody knows that he can field, he can run, he can throw, but he can't hit. But the sabermetrics will say that he can, right? So it's a balance of which side of the coin you're on of the sabermetrics argument. So, you know, right now, probably one of the most seasoned veterans in the Cardinal outfield is Dylan Carlson. Because Justin Williams was called up last year after Dylan Carlson. Austin Dean has seen some major league time with Miami, so it's probably him. But outside of that, it's Dylan Carlson. He and Austin Dean had the same time on the Cardinals as together. So it's bizarre when you have somebody who just graduated from prospect status 2 weeks ago that is one of your most seasoned veterans in the outfield, at least in terms of who's on the field right now. So there are, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but there are a lot of question marks and, you know, a high upside. I think Carlson could be a household name come July if he performs. I think Justin Williams has a track record in the minor leagues of doing nothing but hit. And Austin Dean has shown some power this season as well. So it's just a matter of, can they put it together? And right now they're not. I mean, there's no other way around it. This offense is struggling right now. There's no question outside of the top four. But we'll see. I think that, you know, maybe the off day yesterday helped them. Maybe they come back more rested and things like that. But I agree with you that they've had a lot of strikeouts, and I'm not a big fan of strikeouts. And I know that baseball is going more towards that route. But when this team doesn't strike out, they tend to win games. So
more of my conversation with Lucas Smith from Locked On Cardinals coming right up. But first, I want to tell you about my friends at Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. They have 18 amazing flavors out these days with, of course, their 6 new ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and their apple almond crisp. My personal favorite, gotta go with the cookies and cream. Love those things. Their bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, but the best part, Built Bars are healthy. They are great for the health-conscious guy or girl. They will help you lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber, and great for anyone looking to go on that diet. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Again, go to BuiltBar.com and use that promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order. One last time, use that promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Also want to tell you about my friends at BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football and college basketball might be over, but the NBA, Major League Baseball, and NHL, they are all in full swing of their seasons. They even cover awards, TV shows, and reality TV at BetOnline with real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, sports, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device today and sign up, and you'll receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit when you use that promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that promo code is LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Be a waiver wire winner at the Locked On Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It's a daily fantasy baseball podcast hosted by veteran analyst Scott Cullen, who uses data and nearly two decades of fantasy baseball experience to offer the strategies and waiver wire pickups that lead to league wins. Follow Locked On Fantasy Baseball on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's hard to move up any runners or do anything productive when you're just whiffing on pitches or you're taking pitches over the plate and you're getting yourself into bad counts. And it just makes for awful baseball. Like, I'm sitting there watching those games the other night and it's like one strikeout after the next, after the next, after the next. And this team, I mean, the Phillies really looked lifeless the other night. And it's funny. Someone was saying it the other day and it's true. Like, this team, when you go back to the Phillies, when they were actually making the postseason, like a decade ago, like they would go on the road and they would play really well. So the Phillies since 2018, I forget the exact record, but they have like a higher than 650 winning percentage at home. And then on the road, it flips. It's like below 350. And then they've overall been about a 500 franchise. Yep. And they really seem to, like last year, I think they definitely missed the fans. And it's a cliche and they all say it. But they really seem to feed off of it. And even the first 12 games here, it proves itself. Like, they seem to really get a lot of energy from playing at home. And then they go on the road and take, for instance, a place like Marlins Park, which has been a house of horrors for the Phillies because it's dead. And it seems like when a game is dead, like, this team goes to sleep with it. Like, they used to get energy from a guy like Jimmy Rollins at the top of that lineup, and they really seem to used to be motivated. They don't, like, when they're playing a game that has no life to it, like, this team puts you to sleep just very, very fast. And so it's weird because they're a group that's relatively, they vary in experience, I should say. A number of guys from outside the organization, Bryce Harper's obviously played in a number of big games, and he hears it everywhere he goes. Andrew McCutchen's been around a while. JT Realmuto's been around a while. But this isn't a group that necessarily, they're not a group that necessarily does well, like, under the radar. Like, they almost need something to get them going. And sometimes they struggle to find that spark. And if they struggle early in a game and it's dead, or they're in an opposing ballpark where it's not very lively, like, they just put you right to sleep almost. And the at-bats go right to sleep too. Then nothing ever gets going. And you know, that you could make this argument going back to it of, well, how much of that relies on a manager in Joe Girardi to, like, pump up his guys. And I'm not in the clubhouse every day. I'm not one of the beat reporters who's with them. And in COVID times, it's even harder than usual with Zoom and stuff like that. But I don't know how much relies on the guys in the clubhouse, how much relies on the manager, how much just relies on team culture, team chemistry, all that kind of stuff in general to. They went to Marlins Park last year for 7 games and lost 5 of 7. And they have a losing record there against one of the worst teams in the National League East over the past couple of years. Because when the ballpark is dead, like, so are they. And when they go on the road, they can't find a way to spark an offense early. And they always get behind on themselves. And then they just all start sometimes swinging for the fences and strike out, or they just put together poor bats. They're missing on pitch, like, they're fouling off pitches that they should be hitting. It's a very weird thing to, like, watch happen. And it's not, ultimately, if this team plans on making the postseason, like, they're going to have to figure it out, especially with these COVID crowds. Like, you're not going to be able to do it. So that's kind of where I'm at with this team on the road, getting a spark. They sometimes struggle for it. Sometimes you can feel a game shifting and you can feel like this team has no life. And they definitely showed that on this latest road trip. again, they pulled out a gutsy win off of a controversial call in Atlanta the other night in a ballpark that was lively. But they really seemed to do a lot better when the Mets were in Philly to start the year. And there's Phillies fans and there's Mets fans, especially because it was their opening day. And it was a lively crowd, and they all seemed to really respond well to that. And they won 2 out of 3 from them. And the opening crowds in the season against the Braves, they won 3 in a row, and the team was really into it. And then they get away from Philly, and they just, like, go to sleep again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting thought of, like, the players, you know, wanting to have fans and trying to feed off of that. And, you know, I think that you do a point of, is that a managerial issue? Because, you know, I think that managers do try and bring culture into it. So we'll see. What's the capacity at Philadelphia? I don't know. Is it 20%, 30?
Not quite. So they, well, no. They are at, so they allowed 10. They started at 8. The stadium holds 45,000. They started at 8,000. It got bumped up to 10,000 or so for the first homestand. I believe they're still there. So they're right around, yeah, I think it got bumped to the 25% mark from 20, actually, in that opening series. So they're right around 25 for outdoor events. I know the Sixers and Flyers have been working with a little bit less. They've been working like 5,000-6,000 person crowds in a 20,000 seat arena. But yeah, so they're right around the 25% mark. Obviously, varying things around the country in terms of distribution of the vaccine and how they, you know, how certain areas view it and things like that. But yeah, I think we're slowly getting back to larger crowds here. I had a chance to go the first Sunday of the year, actually, when Zach Eflin pitched, who the Cardinals will see tonight. And that was the first ever 25% crowd. I was sitting down the left field line. So that was a cool thing to actually finally get back in a ballpark, because I hadn't been to a game since the end of, I mean, no one had since the end of the 2019 season. And game was actually in Pittsburgh, because I happened to be out there for a trip with school. So, and I hadn't been to a sporting event since an NBA game back in March of 2020. So it was my first time going back in the stadium in more than a year. And it felt, look, it wasn't exactly the same. There actually are some perks to it. It's not a full crowd, but you can put your feet up on the chair in front of you. You can kind of, you can actually spread out a little bit. Like, it's almost like your own little, like, everyone's got their own little balcony kind of like looking into the game. The crowd got into it at certain points. It certainly fed off of it. Opening day was really, really loud. The weather fortunately cooperated. So I'm looking forward to seeing how things progress here over the course of the season. It's fun looking at these schedules and saying, all right, maybe do I want to, I always enjoy asking this too. What's your ballpark count out? Like, ballpark count at, like, historically, like, other than Busch Stadium?
Let's see. I've been to, I always have to think about it. I've been to all 5 National League Central. I've been to Cleveland 6, Washington 7, Minute Maid, I think 8. Is the number. And then I've been to both Washington and St. Louis spring training facilities.
Okay. So I've been to 9 lifetime, if you include Veterans Stadium, which was the old ballpark in Philly. Right. Citizens Bank Park, Citi Field, New Yankee Stadium, Fenway, Camden Yards, Nationals Park. I was on a vacation in San Francisco, so I got to Oracle.
Sweet.
And I'm trying to think if I'm forgetting any PNC Park I got to.
No, I've also been to Kansas City. So,
okay. So, it's a little bit harder in the Midwest, I guess, because, like, you know, New York's 2 hours from where I am, DC is 3 hours south, Boston's 6. The NL East, though, is a little bit more, like, I've never been to Atlanta, or I've been to Miami, the city, and I've been in the Atlanta airport, but I've never been inside either of those ballparks. So, those can be a little bit more difficult. But, like, I was eyeballing with someone we both know, and we were talking beforehand. You're a Mizzou guy, Josh Neighbors from Locked On Nationals. I'm like, look, if they're allowing people later in the season, it's been a while since I've been down there. Maybe I make a trip to Nats Park later in the season and for, like, Phillies Nationals, because they're there in the middle of the summer. Or maybe I start eyeballing the Phillies play at Citi Field and Yankee Stadium this year. Maybe I make one of those trips. I did the Fenway Park trip for the first time ever 2 years ago when the Phillies were playing up there. So I always enjoy eyeballing that kind of stuff. I don't know when the next time I'll get out of, like, the day trip region kind of thing will be. I have been fortunate enough to get vaccinated, but, you know, a number of things to still be worked out there, and slowly bringing things back kind of seems to be the MO here. And they're not allowing full crowds, and some places are expensive to get into these days. So maybe just to open up the season, I'll do a couple home games. But no, it's been fun. I don't know. So Columbia is 2 hours from St. Louis. Am I correct?
Yeah,
about that. So I don't know how often. And you grew up how far from St. Louis?
Google Maps says 245, but I say 2.5.
All right, 215 with a heavy foot. So I don't know how often you get to Busch Stadium during the season, but look, it's definitely fun to go back and whenever you can get to. How far is Kansas City from Columbia?
From Columbia, it's 2 hours. So Columbia splits the difference between Kansas City and St. Louis. So it's 2 hours.
Okay, so I don't know where you usually get to a game, or whether it's easier to get to a game while you're in school or whether you're out of school this summer. And obviously, I don't know what you have going on or we've had going on during the summer, especially in these current times. But
right,
yeah, if you can make the trip, and that's something that's like foreign to me too, like having to go 2 hours to go see your home team play. Like I can just like impulse decide to go to Citizens Bank Park. I'm there in 20 minutes. So
yeah,
it's a luxury I don't take for granted for sure. But yeah, so it was a lot of fun, and it's not exactly the same, but the crowd was into it. And like I said, believe it or not, there are some perks to it.
Yeah, I feel like that would be fun to, you know, I feel like whenever I go to a game, I forget how like majestic all these players are, because you see him on TV. Like, for example, you see like a guy like Matt Carpenter. He seems real like herky jerky at the plate. But then when you watch him play live, it's just one smooth. Like, they're so smooth, like on everything that they do. So that's one reason I love going, because you get to see really just how majestic and powerful all these guys really are.
How many guys left in baseball these days are still doing the no batting gloves thing? Because that's what I always think of when I think.
I can't think of any to come straight to my head. Can you?
Well, so Carpenter was the guy I always thought of.
Yeah, Carpenter. I mean, outside of Carpenter.
Every now and again, Bryce Harper will change. Like, he'll go like one batting glove if things aren't going well. And I feel like you see guys do that kind of stuff. But that's like his brand is going up there just like raw with no,
he's always done hands. That. He was weird. He wore batting gloves one time to batting practice in Cincinnati on opening weekend, and we haven't seen it since. So I don't know why. I don't know how he does it. I mean, especially with a wooden bat.
If you're Matt Carpenter, I don't think you can do that. Like, again, that's like that ruins his what he's known for, at least from an outsider's perspective.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Any other thoughts before we wrap this up on the Cardinals? Where were you at win total wise with the Cardinals to begin the year? Where are you now? I always like hearing that too.
Yeah. Coming in, I think I put the cap on them at about 94 wins. I don't think this is a 95 win team, even with the weak NL Central. But I would say I sit comfortably at like 91 wins. You know, it's tough to really change that 12 games in. I mean, anywhere from 88 to 92 is where I still see this team sitting right now. And to me, that wins them the NL Central. I mean, especially with how bad Pittsburgh, and I think Chicago is going to be really bad. So I think anywhere from 88 to 92 wins is realistic still.
I was at 85 wins with the Phillies to start the year. After the first six games, it was like, maybe a little bit more. Now they've come out of it 500. I still think they haven't had a winning record since that 2011 team that played the Cardinals in the postseason when they won 102 games. So they've had a 500 record, but they've never actually gotten above it. I feel like this team is good enough, offense dependent, of course. I feel like they're good enough to get there. My concerns with the team coming in, and I think everyone's concerns with the team, haven't been the things that have been concerning in the first 2 weeks. Like I said, everyone was like, the offense will be fine. They're basically returning the same lineup. It's the pitching depth. Mm-hmm. It's the Matt Moore, the Chase Anderson starts. It's the depth of the bullpen. When this team gets challenged with an injury, what happens here? If the offense hits like this all summer, which I can't imagine they will, especially when they return home, I feel like they could be an 85 win team. I think they probably fall short of the playoffs with that, unfortunately. A difficult National League East. I think ultimately the Braves figure it out. I think the Mets will have a strong season. And it's just going to be hard to get a wild card spot in the National League. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the Cardinals competing Padres is a team where they're playing is like the one everyone thinks of, where they're in the same division as the Dodgers. Like, there's going to be teams in it at the end. It feels like the Cardinals, if they're not leading the NL Central, always find their way into the wild card chase. It just from an outsider's perspective also. So there's going to be a number of teams there at the end. You probably have to get into that 90 category to contend for a playoff. But sometimes high 80s does it, especially with the fifth wild card spot. But they're back to 10 playoff teams, five in each league. So I'll say slightly above 500 and probably fall short of a playoff spot. That's what I said at the beginning of the season, just before opening day. I'll stick to it now.
There you go. I like it. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Lucas Smith, thank you so much for your time today. Again, a little Locked On Phillies, Locked On Cardinals crossover. We'll be interesting to see what happens at Citizens Bank Park this season. These two teams, by the way, done with each other by the end of April. They play this weekend, and then they play four times at Busch the final week, the 26th to the 29th, and then they don't see each other again all year, which I never like when the schedule kind of maps out that way. Like, I prefer to span it out over the course of a season because they're going to see the exact same team just like two times in a row here. But that's how it goes. So maybe we'll cross over again. We'll talk again after this series or before that series at Busch. But first time meeting you today, certainly a pleasure. And go Phils.
A pleasure as well. Thanks, Dan.
That'll do it for my conversation with Lucas Smith from Locked On Cardinals. Special thank you to Lucas for hopping on here earlier today and talking about this upcoming series in Philly this weekend. My takeaway from that, if nothing else, I can't believe that they still cling to the rally squirrel out in St. Louis. Brings back painful memories from my time as a Phillies fan as a kid back in eighth grade. I guess I was like 14 years old the last time the Phillies made the playoffs, and I can't believe that the most recent time the Phillies were in the playoffs was against the St. Louis Cardinals the last time they went on to win the World Series. So, you know, can't believe they still cling to that rally squirrel thing. It brings back tons of PTSD for me, but in all seriousness, always, or I shouldn't say always, I enjoyed talking to Lucas for the first time, and I can tell that he's someone that I'm always going to enjoy talking to down the road the course of the season. The Phillies have a series coming up at Busch Stadium later this April, so perhaps we will do it again. So special thank you to Lucas. If you want to follow the podcast on Twitter, at @LO_Phillies. If you want to follow myself on Twitter, at @Dan_Wilson4. I will have more Locked On Phillies for you coming up next week, recapping the series against the St. Louis Cardinals. Hopefully the bats come back. Until then, have a great weekend, everybody. I'll talk to you next week.